Good morning, everyone. My name is Richard O'Connor. I am commercial director for EG. A lot has changed in the last 5 months, clearly, and businesses are beginning to pick up the pieces, plan for the rebuild and recovery phase, which is likely to go well into next year. For most, I think growth targets for 2020 are now beyond reach, which brings cost and margin into much sharper focus. And today we're going to talk about one of the ways that margin can be improved and costs can be cut by reducing avoidable costs. And today I've got two people here with me who have been very close to these types of changes and changes that improve operational efficiency to address some of those avoidable cost issues. So I have here with me Steve Jack, who is COO of UK and EMEA Capital Markets for JLL. And I also have Matt Chung, who is the CEO of Clarisys, who are a business transformation consultancy and work very closely with organisations, including JLL, to improve the ways that they work, particularly around the use of technology. So we're going to have a discussion this morning just talking about some of the experiences that both Matt and Steve have had over the past couple of years, and also a bit of a picture of what the future looks like, and also some of the work that EG are doing in this space, how we use technology to help organisations better run their businesses and drive out legacy ways of working and these avoidable costs. So I'm going to start with Steve, if I may. Steve, you've been through a number of changes in the last couple of years with JLL. I mean, how did JLL get to the point where we are now? And there's been a big focus on technology and data. What's driven that focus?
Hi, Richard. It's been a number of things, but the number one being just a huge focus on just centralizing and commercializing the data that we've got. Our business works on insight by creating opportunities for clients, and with our people being involved in so many different things across all of the real estate asset classes, it just provides a unique opportunity. And we felt there was also a huge opening for a much more data-driven analysis that our clients were seeking. So a number of years ago, our global CEO made the comment that we'll be a technology company operating in real estate, which raised quite a few eyebrows. But I think really what he was trying to do was just to kind of give us a bit of a shock treatment to say, guys, this is the direction. Since then, we've created our own venture capital arm called JLL Spark, which is invested in a number of tech startups, a number of which actually disrupt existing parts of our own business. And then we've also been using our data to find different ways to give insight to clients. So an example being our next office suite in the UK. And I think so what that really has come down at all levels. So yeah, okay, we've been hiring new skill sets for a while. And the Silicon Valley entrepreneurs that came in to start JLL Spark now run our whole technology and IT organization. So it really has gone down and all the way down to teams. That's how we got to where we are now. And it feels like an ever-changing picture.
No, fair enough. And you mentioned talent there and bringing in external expertise into the organization. And you touched on data and technology. You've done a lot. It's been a big transformation journey. And, we've talked a lot about this over the past year. What have you found has been the hardest part of it? Thinking about our listeners and those thinking about how they need to, perhaps reshape their own organisations and think about the future. What have you found to be the most challenging?
Sure. I think you have to have the new skills, and you have to be hiring from outside of your previous talent pools in order to push you forward. So I think that's a given, but actually the hardest challenge, but also where the biggest opportunity is in bringing people with you. I feel like our culture is very collaborative and is very based on people sharing intelligence, sharing views with one another. And similarly, the way that we work with clients is helping distill a huge amount of information to just relevant insight. So that to me means that a core part of anything you do is bringing your organization with you. And it's just inspiring people to say that you don't need to have worked in Silicon Valley to be effective in this area. You know, many of our presenters in the next office suite, don't have that sort of background. That's precisely why it's effective. So it's enabling people to understand, okay, how to use the tools we've got and how to get the most out of them. That in turn enables them to change the service that they provide to clients. So I would say, centralizing the data, figuring out ways to structure it, to push-pull it between platforms, figuring out different ways to visualize it to clients. Yeah, huge challenges. But actually, unless you bring the people with you, all of that counts for nothing.
Sure. And how do you do that? I mean, how do you go about getting a workforce of people who've worked in the same way for many years, plus that new thinking that comes in with hiring new talent? I mean, how do you balance that?
I think there's a lot of kind of old fashioned nitty-gritty of actually just looking at how we do things and kind of enabling people to come up with ideas to improve them. It's not that glamorous. The other side to it is where we have new products, spending a lot of time on training, and not training in the traditional sense. So we would anything we would do, we would think about both from a customer experience and a user experience perspective. So, okay, what are we delivering to the client? But equally, how are we equipping our people to be able to do that? So, for example, within the capital markets business, we have a group of people who deliberately are not tech people. What we do is we say, what's the most commercial ways we can use the technology we have? What skills do our people need that they don't have? How do we make the training simple, consumable, bite size, and importantly, really just directed to role? So what the tech people would call kind of persona-based training.
Sure. And it's interesting, you've talked about, process optimization and, making connections between systems and data. And if I think, if we're being honest, many people, at the moment, I think when you think about cost savings, they think about, large costs like tech, or legacy tech systems, but they also think about people. And I think what I'm hearing is that from a process optimization point of view, there is a lot of costs that can be saved, and a lot of efficiencies that can be driven without people. Actually, people are the people, using people are the is an excellent way of driving through some of these changes that avoid headcount reduction or that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because from the one side, that the drivers in terms of it's clear that clients could be better served with a more data-driven approach, and also we've massive pull from clients for that, and clear that the disruption we've seen elsewhere was coming to real estate. But just keeping it relevant, keeping it casual, and helping people get to insights faster is really how we're doing it. So, it really is all about the people, because providing people with that kind of data, for example, in CRM platforms like Salesforce, through bringing together our own proprietary data with market data from Radius Data Exchange, it enables people to be more effective and enables people to spend more time doing what they are brilliant at. So in each of those cases, you are actually optimizing processes.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, just to throw my own experience in here and perhaps to shed a bit more light on this, you know, as in a previous life working for a global exhibitions business, we did a large scale transformation and spent some time looking at, you know, the ways that we worked and some of the inefficiencies of the ways that we worked. You know, working with Clarice and Matt who are on the call, you know, and what we discovered is that there are people who are working in your business and, you know, in the people listening in those your businesses who have always done things a certain way and never challenged the conventional wisdom or the way that things have been worked. And just one example, we had a person who worked in our finance team who was producing a report which took them nearly a day a week. And it was a heavily manual report pulled together from different Excel spreadsheets and from different countries around the world. It was a report that ostensibly was going up to the board and was being seen by the CEO, you know, literally a day a week. So, you know, there's a significant cost to that. And when we interrogated that and actually challenged it, if that had been going on for 5 or 6 years, that report didn't go to more than one person. It went to that person's boss, who had a quick look at it and then filed it. And you know, the person who was actually producing that report, apart from the inefficiency and the time that had gone into a report that didn't go to where they thought it had been, you know, they were deeply upset that the work that they've been doing had not gone where, you know, had not been going up to the CEO, had not had the visibility. And unless you challenge some of these ways of working and really go out of your way to make those challenges, you don't understand and you don't realize that you've probably got a workforce where 20% of what they do is it can be avoided. It's avoidable work, and as you say, Steve, can be put into value driving activity and the bits that they love.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I mean, you've talked about data. What about you know, data in your business? You've been through a move to become a modern tech-driven organization. You know, how are you using data? You know, what difference is it making to JLL?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is we have a number of really core principles that we try and stick to. So, for example, any data we use has to be structured, and we have to be able to push it, pull it between systems, and be able to interrogate it. So, similarly, the partners that we work with, we have to be able to receive data in a format that enables that. But it fundamentally, it's about, there's so much data we could use. It's about deciding what actually is really useful and important for our teams. And then how do we get that in their hands in the simplest possible manner? Typically a lead in for us with that is the CRM platform they're using, mm-hmm. because that's typically where we're going for client insight. But further to that, it's for example, we've just launched an investor portal called Investor Center, which we use to send out marketing materials to investors, because that's integrated to our CRM platform, where we know people have bid on something but not won it. We can more simply and more quickly match them to other opportunities they are likely to be interested in. Mm. So, you know, it's an example of, you know, from a broker's perspective, that's all done within the CRM. But actually, there's sort of three or four databases behind that.
Right. Okay. Tell us what's next for JLL. What does the next 6 months and you know, going into next year, what does the next 18 months look like?
Yeah. So the JLL Spark and JLL Technologies are going to be buying or developing more and more products that we're going to use within our business. So the obvious example previously being Next Office, but we're going to see more of that. We're also going to be commercializing a number of the early stage VC investments that JLL Spark makes. So you've got that in terms of, you could think of that as like external pushing us ahead. Sure. And then in terms of internally, it's continuing to leverage the data platforms that we have. So certainly Radius, for example, is a big part of that. We are going to be continuing to use that data in our mostly our transactions and valuation teams. And bringing all of that data together into with other data sources globally into a single platform that our people can use. That's probably our biggest internal project for the next 12 months.
Sure. It's been quite a journey and quite a lot still to come. But Steve, I mean, you've spent time at PwC, so you've had experience of other industries. I'm going to bring Matt in as well, because, you know, clearly he has worked across a number of different industries doing this type of work. But what's the outside in perspective from your point of view? What have you been able to bring from your experience of other industries into JLL? And what do we learn from other industries from a real estate, commercial real estate point of view?
Sure. I think first and foremost, it's applying perhaps a different mindset. My experience in PwC was I was effectively a consultant helping companies change how they operate. And so I'd worked across certainly real estate, but also insurance, energy, financial services. But actually the really common things were finding ways to enable your people to be effective within whatever you set up. I would say that's the number one theme which goes across all of those areas. But I certainly, I've now been at JLL for 7 years, and it's changed beyond recognition in that time. And we've continued to hire people continually from outside the real estate, estate industry. It just helped us give us that different perspective.
Okay, well, it's really interesting and a good point to bring Matt in. So Matt, I mean, you know, Clarisys, you know, we've worked together in the past on a large global Salesforce rollout. You've worked on with a number of large and medium-sized and small organizations on transformation programs. You know, as a consultant, as somebody who, you know, is really rolling up their sleeves and helping businesses, improve their operational efficiency. What experience and what learnings have you had from the last few years that you think are relevant to, you know, the situation that we find ourselves in now?
So I think to echo some of Steve's points, you do have to make sure you bring people along with you and that you're really looking for how you can make their working life better by freeing up time where they were doing mundane stuff and using that to do something more productive. You probably find you get a factor of improvement beyond what you expected. So we would take probably two or three lenses. We would look at customer experience, because it's very important to understand how the customer views you rather than just taking your own perspective on that. So talking to actual customers will always help your transformation be accurate. Secondly, then from an employee point of view, making sure that whatever you're doing works for an employee, and then trying to get the best out of your technology. Now, the thing that underlies kind of all of that is getting people to talk to each other within the business to understand what each other does. One of the most common things we come across is going into an organization that's starting their transformation journey, and you try and walk through perhaps a new sale or a sale to an existing account or any of those things, and you discover that often the teams haven't talked to each other about how they've done that process, and maybe not for years. They've just known how to do it. And so one of the things that we bring is the ability to provide kind of an external mirror to what the organization is doing, and allow people to reflect and say, oh, that's a bit strange. Why do I do that? To your point earlier about the reports, and I think to one of Steve's points about when you're doing it, you don't notice whether it's efficient or not. And that's a big piece. And then I think often we find massive frustration with existing technology and existing data that may need more of a process fix than actually a technology fix. And it's important that you recognize when you need some simplification in your process rather than trying to apply perhaps quite a complex technology fix.
Yeah.
Because as we all know, transformation programs are quite risky, and you want to get out the benefit as quickly as you can. So if there's a simple process fix to do, albeit it only gives you 80% of the benefit, then you should do that. If you need the extra 20%, then you have to consider carefully what your priorities are, so you're going after the right things first.
Mm.
And I always like to get people to think about what would happen if you cut off your funding halfway through. You really want to be in a position where you've got something that you can use if you cut off your funding halfway through. Otherwise, you've kind of sunk that investment without any hope of any return.
Sure. And it's interesting what you say about, you know, technology and process. So certainly our experience, and I'd be interested in your view, is the sequencing here, because, you know, one of the challenges we have with some of our, you know, technologies, and, you know, we want customers to get the best out of Radius, the best out of Valuations 360. But in order to do that, we also want to challenge customers' ways of working so they can get the best out of it. And, you know, I think what I'm hearing is that dropping technology in as a panacea for all of your operational problems is not the answer. You have to challenge the process and the ways of working first. Is that your experience?
Yeah, my experience is if you focus on process and customer experience first, then and making sure that you're aiming for simple, unless it's your differentiator, makes technology implementation cheaper and more likely to succeed. If you're trying to implement complicated in technology, it will end up even more complicated. And yeah. So if you are doing that, you have to be very, very clear why you're doing that.
Mm. So again, I mean, thinking about the listener, so we you know, I think, you know, people will be thinking, I hope, thinking, well, there may be an opportunity here. But practically, what do you do? How do you go about this? You know, what is the approach and the benefits of going through a, let's say, a customer journey and process mapping exercise? What are the outputs? You know, if somebody wanted to walk away and start this as an exercise, how would they get started and how would they go about it?
Okay, so the outputs of any customer journey and process mapping exercise should really be as simple as a customer journey map, which will show the experience of dealing with you that the customer has, right? So how do they feel as they interact with you? What kind of timing is there between the touch points? Because often you find that whilst you're doing lots of stuff in the background, the customer's actually wondering what on earth is going on. And so how long does that journey take from end to end? And that can be shown in a simple kind of PowerPoint deck. It can be in a PDF. It can be on the wall. It doesn't matter. It depends on the sophistication that you need. I would always urge people to do that from a persona point of view, and also treat it as a kind of valuable asset that you're going to build on in the future. So preferably it ends up digitally. Process maps, simple flow, for anything from a simple flow chart to something more sophisticated that maps through to your systems and your data. You know, you take someone like JLL, who are global, very large firm, then you're going to want to map your data against it. You're going to want to map your systems against it. You want roles and all of that. If you're in a much more simple environment, then potentially it's a more flow chart type thing. And how do you go about it? So the two things are slightly different, but at some point during that, you're gonna want to really run a workshop to walk through, in the customer example, ideally with some customers, what does the journey look like for you? That may take some patience on your part and some controlling of the natural defensiveness that comes to the fore when the customer says, "I feel terrible about this step." And that's probably driven through post-its on the wall, moving things around. In COVID times, that will be using some kind of online journey mapping tool that allows you to move things around on the screen, or even a whiteboard on one of the conferencing platforms. And then taking that and synthesizing it and really trying to make sure that you've validated the points around it, perhaps doing some survey behind it to say, were my two customers representative? And then underlying that is obviously there's a set of processes. So we would really take the teams that support that customer and that, those processes and walk through with those employees to say, well, what happens here? Why does this happen? What data do you collect? What systems are you working in? Ideally, we'd look at kind of over the shoulder of people as they're doing their jobs, because often that really brings home how complex the process is or how complicated it has become. You might find there are post-its all over their screens or they're scribbling stuff down because the system doesn't support it. And often people gloss over that as they're describing it to you, either because they've forgotten about it or because they just want to make their work seem better. Rather than saying, actually, the system's a nightmare, the process is a nightmare, it's very hard to onboard new people. And sometimes that just people don't naturally want to talk about that, perhaps in front of their colleagues or perhaps in front of external people. So it's really getting insight from a set of workshops, a set of interviews, and then some observation. It doesn't have to take a long time. In a small organization, you can probably map most of the important processes in a week. I guess in something more enterprise size, typically discovery takes something like 8 weeks to understand enough of what's going on to allow you to make prioritization choices. And that's the important thing. You don't want to go out and discover everything. You want to be moving towards, well, here's what good looks like, and here's where you could make improvements, which are then actionable.
Sure. Okay. It would be great to talk about a tangible example. You know, the three of us have worked on a small project within JLL. Steve, why don't you tell us a little bit about what we did with your capital markets process?
Yeah, sure. So what we did was we took a very standardized process, our quarterly stats preparation. And actually just pulled it apart totally using Matt's team from Clarisys, and actually said, well, where are all the handoff points? Where could this be better? And identified multiple inefficiencies, weaknesses between teams, people handing spreadsheets up to each other. I mean, we quantified it and used up to £10,000 of cost each time we ran that process.
Right.
So things like Radius have the potential to eliminate that by providing us with all of that market information straight away, so that the time that those researchers are spending collating the data, they can actually spend analysing it and, you know, doing the stuff that they're brilliant at. Going through that with Matt's team was brilliant. We found so much to improve that process. I really just took a whole lot of friction out of it. And made it, if you can say so, more joyful for the people involved.
And I guess the point there is that's just one process of which there are hundreds, possibly more within an organisation the size of JLL or similar organisations, or even in smaller organisations. And I just want to pick up on one point that you said there. We'll talk a little bit about the specific process we went to in a second, but there seems to be, certainly my experience, and I'm hearing it more and more, something around Excel spreadsheets and, you know, in the valuations world, Microsoft Word, and people fiddling about in offline software packages, particularly those two. But Excel is the one that comes up quite a lot. Again, thinking about the people listening to this call, is the use of Excel a kind of a warning indicator of potential inefficient process, particularly if you're sitting, you know, if you're sitting outside finance? Clearly, people, you know, use Excel for finance. Matt, Steve, what do you think?
I think so. I'll give you two perspectives. Within my own business, I am quite allergic to having Excel doing stuff because that means we're not using the tools that we've got within the business to drive us forward. There are exceptions to that, where you're developing something new, where it's useful really to run that process in something very lightweight that then evolves. Yeah. What you've got to watch out for is that then becoming permanent. And then I think, yes, in many of our clients, a lot of Excel sheets is a sign that the process is becoming inefficient. People are exporting data, they're fiddling with it in order to get it into the right format to go somewhere else, or they're matching it, or they're keeping it offline because the system just isn't delivering on what they need. So yes, but it's not purely black and white, I think.
Sure. But so we shouldn't wipe out, you know, take Excel away from people, but we should be aware that it could be an indicator. I mean, to give another perspective, we have Salesforce. We're part of a large FTSE 20 organization, and we have Salesforce. But there are still, certainly, you know, even within our team, there are still people who run their pipeline on Excel. And you know, the benefit of investing in a world-class CRM system is diluted if people are still working offline and still working in Excel. So that's to me where there is a warning indicator. If you've got technology where you know you're expecting, your expectations, people are using it, but there are still these, you know, systems and old ways of working that are sitting in drawers and are done under the desk, that to me is where there's an opportunity for improvement.
Richard, I think that comes back to Steve's original point about adoption, right? So in that scenario, I think as the chief sales officer, I'd be very upset because the Excel use is diluting my ability to understand what's going on in the business. I don't know, Steve, whether you managed to drive, how you managed to get around kind of people's love for Excel as you rolled out Salesforce.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing divorcing someone from Microsoft Excel. But I mean, I guess you've got the top down ways of, you know, we only review or accept pipeline from Salesforce. People only run BD sections of team meetings from Salesforce. But then you've also got almost like a bit of kind of a cultural pressure that, you know, actually if you see everyone else using Salesforce, it becomes almost socially unacceptable for you not to do so. So you kind of have like a bit top down and a bit bottom up.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, one of the things we wanted to talk about moving forward is, you know, we're going to work together again. And Matt, you know, again, thinking about the people on the call who might have, you know, this conversation may have piqued their interest. You know, we've been talking about how do you do this kind of consultancy piece at scale that perhaps doesn't take 8 weeks, and you know, I think people will be thinking, you know, is this a costly exercise? And we've been exploring ways of doing this at a bit more scale. I mean, more detail to follow, but perhaps you could just touch on that.
Yeah, I think the work we did with Steve's team is reasonably representative of being able to do something quite quickly. And what we're looking at is how we productize that in a way that means that you can achieve something similar in a kind of week-long exercise, perhaps not as face-to-face, which obviously is limited in the current world anyway. And then obviously that depends on the size of the organization and the complexity of the process. But we'd expect to be able to get to some point where people are able to collaborate quite quickly over a straw man process and say, okay, actually, I can understand where the bad bits of this are and I know how to fix them, or I don't. And then the bits where you don't, it's a case of let's dive into them a bit deeper. I think we're still validating whether we can do it as quickly as we hope. But as you say, more to come.
Brilliant. All right. Well, listen, time's up. Thank you both very much for, I certainly found it a fascinating conversation. And look forward to continuing the discussions this year. And, you know, I'm sure at some point we'll be able to come back and give people further updates on progress that we've made. But thanks very much to the both of you.